using technology to educate juvenile offenders. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. On Friday, the European Union did grant Greece its extension to its financial lifeline, but in return, Greece now needs to immediately write down, sign, and hand in a list of financial reforms. The BBC's Mark Lowen is covering this from Athens.
Today may seem like the naughty pupil submitting homework to the headmaster, but Greece's government has spun it differently, as proof that Greeks are now co-authors of their destiny. Athens will send to Brussels a list of reforms it's willing to make in return for the loan extension. Its creditors will give their verdict tomorrow. If there's disagreement, the deal could collapse. If it needs fine-tuning, Greece has until April to do so. The Greek government says it will suggest reforms to tackle tax evasion, but in reality it'll be forced to adhere to many of the austerity demands of the original bailout. As part of the deal, Greece has agreed not to take any unilateral actions to threaten financial stability. It will still try to push for civil servants to be rehired and social spending increased, but ultimately the creditors will have the final say. And for many here, hoping that the hated oversight of Greece would end, that is a galling prospect.
The BBC's Mark Lowen. There is a big pharmaceutical merger over the last 24 hours. Valeant of Canada is buying Salix for $10 billion. Salix is a leader in medicines for upset stomachs on down. The CEO of Valeant is quoted as saying the growing gastrointestinal market has attractive fundamentals. Valeant's been in the news over the last year when it tried and failed to buy the maker of Botox. Now let's check the numbers. The 100-share index in London is down 0.4%. The DAX in Germany is up 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down. Oil is down 2.1% using the Texas benchmark price, $49.74 a barrel now. In a year, the federal government spends about $150 million on education for neglected and delinquent kids. A big piece of this goes to residential juvenile justice facilities that house an average of 60,000 young people a day. This is a group that is required by law to get schooling, but critics say the record here is not good. As part of our Learning Curve project, Marketplace's Adrian Hill has visited some juvenile justice facilities to look at the role that technology might play here. She's in Los Angeles. Hello, Adrian.
Hi, David.
All right, so what is getting in the way of teaching young people in these residential facilities?
There are a lot of things getting in the way. I mean, first, we know that many of these young men and women come in well below grade level when they're coming into corrections facilities. Many of these students have learning disabilities. They've skipped or dropped out of school in the past. You also have, in lots of facilities, a handful of teachers dealing with a wide range of students at all sorts of grade levels, and not always the resources or institutional support really needed to prioritize education.
And these facilities are just not very good at this?
Historically, no, they are not. If you look at kids in juvenile corrections facilities run by school districts, fewer than half of the kids earn high school credit while they're inside. We also have data showing that over a third of kids who go into these facilities have no change in grade level or actually lose ground when they're there.
Could technology help change some of this for the better?
That's the hope if you get technology right. I mean, the first thing is you might be able to help teachers get the right lessons to the right kids, really use the power of technology to personalize education for every kid in the system. Also, a lot of these young women and men are pulled in and out of classes when they're in these facilities for things like court hearings or probation meetings. There's an idea that technology could really help these kids catch up. So if you miss a class, you can go online, you can see what you missed and catch right back up. And then, David, there's this growing reality that in order to succeed in the world, in high school, in college, when you get out of these facilities, you have to know how to learn online. And really using these tools is just part of what's required of a modern education.
And what was that reading? There's some pressure from above for moving in this direction?
There is. The Department of Justice and the Department of Education have basically said, we don't want to see these kids falling through the cracks anymore. They came out in December putting out guidance calling for better education for kids that are locked up, including more technology-enhanced learning tools.
Marketplace's Adrian Hill. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Adrian will file reports from inside two secure juvenile facilities over the next couple of days. You can find out more by going to marketplace.org/learning curve. postal employees get deserved credit for getting out there in snow, rain, and dark of night. But I want to take a moment to also salute the rest of you during these dark moments of winter who figured out a way to, despite the slush and the ice and the snow, to get the heck into work because that's the sort of person you are. And because the boss said you can't work from home. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein picks it up from there.
For low-wage workers, these nor'easters that have swept up the Atlantic Ocean can be cruel. Amy Traub is a policy analyst with Demos.
If they aren't able to be at work because of the weather, maybe their car won't start or the bus they take to work can't get down an unplowed street, they will miss out on a paycheck as a result. And so for families living paycheck to paycheck, that's really no small matter.
It's not clear how many people can afford to skip a day due to a blizzard. The White House Council of Economic Advisers estimates 39% of private sector workers have no sick leave. That's some 43 million people. New Jersey-based woodworker Kelly Conklin says when the weather turns nasty, he tells it to his 13 employees straight.
Use common sense. Our general policy is we're not asking anybody to risk their lives for this.
Does productivity suffer for it? A bit, says Conklin. But after 30-plus years running his business, he says he's learned a simple lesson. The day after the storm, without any prompting from him, everybody puts in a little extra for a boss who's reasonable. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
And there's news. The head of Honda Motor Company is unexpectedly stepping down. Honda was the carmaker most affected by the defective airbags made by a separate company, Takata. That and recalls put a dent into Honda's reputation for quality. The new CEO, Takahiro Hashigo, is a 33-year Honda veteran. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.